Federal banking regulators are ordering 14 mortgage lenders and servicers to revamp their foreclosure practices and even reimburse homeowners who were incorrectly foreclosed upon. The banks under the order include some of the nation's largest, Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo. Government officials concluded banks often seized homes after filing improper paperwork and were woefully understaffed to handle the surge in homeowners defaulting on their mortgage payments. In the 4 years since the housing bubble burst, 5 million homes have been foreclosed upon. The U.S. economy continues to show signs of improving. The Federal Reserve says factories are busier and consumers are spending more. In New York City, the Fed says tourism picked up in March, hotels were busier, and more people saw a Broadway show. Financial stocks fell today after J.P. Morgan Chase's chief executive said his bank and others will probably have to pay more in fees and penalties as a result of the investigations into their foreclosure practices. The Dow Jones gained 7 points to close at 12,271. The S&P was flat at 1,314. The NASDAQ added 17 points to end the day at 2,762. As you've been hearing on WNYC, President Obama outlined his plan this afternoon to cut the deficit by $4 trillion over 12 years, while also meeting the needs of entitlement programs like Medicare and Medicaid. But what if Congress and the White House did nothing to address the deficit? No new budget plans, no new cuts, no new taxes. Just backed away slowly from the negotiating table and left things just as they are. That's the proposal from Slate's Ann Lowry. She calls it the do-nothing plan for deficit reduction, and she joins us now. Welcome to the Financial 411, Annie.
Thank you for having me.
So before we get into your plan, briefly, what did you think of President Obama's proposal?
People were concerned that he was going to basically take on the recommendations made in the Simpson-Bowles Deficit Commission proposal. His recommendations are actually somewhat more moderate, and it looks good. You know, he set out a 12-year timetable for getting us back to fiscal health and balancing the budget. He's doing it through a combination of tax increases and pretty sensible spending cuts, and it's a fairly moderate program that helps preserve the social safety net, and so I think the progressives and liberals will certainly be happy with it.
So let's turn to your plan, Annie. I know that it was a bit tongue-in-cheek, but when you say do nothing, I take it what you actually mean is letting current laws stand, which would mean temporary tax cuts and spending programs would sunset and reduce future deficits.
Exactly. So yes, it's very tongue-in-cheek, but basically what happens is that the Congressional Budget Office releases periodically these sort of accountings of what will happen if everything stays the same and current law goes forward. And if you look, it's this funny thing that if everybody does nothing, if Congress backs away and doesn't create any new spending or tax cuts or anything, the budget balances in 2018. And it does that because basically a massive tax hike that happens because the AMT passed. And the AMT patch expires, as do the Bush tax cut. So that's kind of what would happen on the revenue side. On the spending side, something called the doc fix, which makes sure that doctors get paid sort of market rates for Medicare patients, that would expire. So the government would pay them very little, and that probably means they would kick those Medicare patients out or stop accepting them. So it's not a good plan, but it would work on paper.
Right. Some very big unintended consequences as a result of doing nothing. I'm wondering, there's a lot of talk about shared sacrifices when it comes to cutting the deficit. How much sacrifice would be shared by doing nothing versus, say, adopting the president's proposals or the House Republican plan?
Well, the burden would be shared in the sense that taxes would go up for just about everybody, including the middle class. You know, you could argue for a more progressive or more regressive tax increase, but essentially on the tax side, you would see the burden being shared pretty equally among everybody as the rates would go back to how they were under President Clinton. On the spending side, the cuts that are sort of already there in law through Medicare, it would hurt the elderly and it would hurt the poor much more. So the burden would be basically placed upon them.
Realistically, how likely is it that Congress and the White House won't act, won't try to? Well, we have the president saying today that he will not extend the Bush tax cuts if they come before him again.
Right. And, you know, he's going to preserve them for people making more than $250,000 a year. Their rates will go back to the Clinton era rates he has promised. So the chance of people doing nothing is absolutely zero. You know, I don't think that you would see anybody letting it happen because, you know, there are certain priorities that both Democrats and Republicans would see quashed in that plan. But at least as a thought experiment, it would work.
A thought experiment. 2018. That's amazing.
Yeah.
How that all works out on paper, at least. Annie Lowry is the business and economics reporter for Slate.com. Thanks for joining us on the 411.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is WNYC.